listening to Bits of Me, the podcast about women's bodies, all the things we should know about them, and all the stories behind them. This week, I talked to pelvic floor physiotherapist Elaine Barry and sexual health educator Anna Kyo about sex after childbirth. We talk about what it might feel like, how it might change, how to even find the time when you've got kids, why on earth some midwives insist on referring to it as getting back on the horse, and much more. If you're a patron of Bits of Me, thank you. If you aren't, but you'd like to support the podcast, go to patreon.com/bitsofme. Is there a myth or a cliche about sex after childbirth that really grinds your gears?
I'll talk first on that if you like. I suppose if I look back onto my first delivery, and I hear this quite a lot, it's that initial conversation you have as you're leaving the hospital that kind of immediately starts to get you thinking about, because they ask you about contraception as you're leaving.
Of course, yeah.
And it kind of gives you this impression that you're going to be back in the saddle, you know, literally as soon as possible. I think that myth that sex after childbirth is just going to come really normally and naturally to everybody, that it's going to be something that you even want to be thinking about as you're leaving a hospital with your new baby. Obviously, they're trying to educate women about maybe not getting pregnant again so quickly and stuff, but I just think it just really, that really grinds on me that women will be able to just kind of pop a baby out and then start thinking about when they're having another one already, or even, you know, why is it even associated with that straight away? That annoys me.
Yeah. Especially considering the baby probably serves as contraception for quite a while in the beginning.
Absolutely.
What about you, Anna?
Yeah, I completely agree, Elaine. It definitely was a conversation that a midwife had with me literally just as I was walking out the door with the car seat. So, yeah, that was confusing. I think for me, as a person who had a C-section, it's kind of the myth that all you're worrying about is the physical aspects of it. So a lot of people I found when I said I had a C-section were very much like, oh, that's great. So you're all still intact down there and everything is good to go down there. And it was a bit like, well, it's not just about that. You know, it's not just about the physical dimensions of my vagina. Like, it's about, you know, how I feel in my body and how I feel myself. And then obviously the scar is a new part of your body and all of the other recovery parts that you have to go through. And then if you're breastfeeding or not breastfeeding, that can kind of play a part of it too. So yeah, that really kind of got to me that people just assumed because I didn't have a vaginal delivery that I was good to go. So that kind of got to me.
Yeah.
And that came up. So I put up some stories on Instagram asking for input before we started recording this. And that that divide, I suppose, between the physical or physiological concerns and questions around healing and scars and stitches and all that. And then the emotional side of it really came up. And there were a few people who said that they're kind of struggling after giving birth with their identity and balancing the role of mother and partner, that there's this change in the relationship naturally as there's another person entering the family.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the time that other person is in your bed as well, you know, for a lot of however long you choose. And we're in a quite small living situation at the moment, so the baby is still in our room. So those aspects, like maybe just like the logistics of it as well, I think can play a part in it too. And I found as well, like the massive hormonal fluctuations that you're going through. Like, I think like 2 weeks after I gave birth, I was like, oh yeah, like definitely wouldn't mind doing it now. And then like 6 weeks later, when I was officially cleared, I had no interest in it whatsoever. So it was funny that it was going kind of up and down. And I think maybe that's not spoken about either. It's kind of like, oh, you're ready, so that means you're ready going forward, rather than a kind of, okay, well, you might feel ready this week, but then next week you might have a really bad run of sleep, or did the baby's teething, or something is happening that can make it go down again, down your list of priorities, I suppose.
Yeah, and it is something, you know, that I never experienced, speaking personally, a wane in desire, you know, before I had kids. Like, I didn't know what that was. And I know that often women struggle with that, but I, you know, and then when I had kids, it was stark, you know, like, and years on, it's stark, the change, and being able to flick the switch. So it's combined with pure and utter exhaustion in every fiber of your being, both mentally and physically. Yeah. There's the desire just from a hormonal stage. Your body's amazing. I think it really does shut you down in terms of knowing what you're capable of, what you can give. And I'm an overgiver at the best of times. So like I totally allow my babies to just take. I'm not terrible, but that's the way I mother. Yeah. And so, you know, being able to give on another. And I suppose that's my role maybe on the other side of things when it comes to sex. Possibly I've put myself in that role too. So it is a change in kind of trying to change your perspective on that. It's a whole new learning curve on what sex means to you when you're a mother.
And Elaine, then, I love, you know, the way you're saying that. Sorry to speak over you there, but I love the way you're saying that. Like, I would have been the same as you, like, you know, never kind of experienced too many fluctuations in my drive in general. And then like that, yeah, hit me like a ton of bricks then after having a baby that this wasn't something I was thinking about all the time. So, you know, a week or two or three could pass and I'd say, oh, okay, we, you know, haven't done that in a while. But the thing that you mentioned there really struck a chord with me is like the mental space. Like, so when you become a parent, like all of a sudden, like you're thinking about, like, you know, when did we change the nappy last? When did they have their last feed? Is there enough clothes washed? You know, when did they poo last? When did they burp? You know, like the like most unsexiest things that you can be thinking about. And then to try and turn that off then for even a half an hour, or kind of going ahead with it and having those thoughts like halfway through, like what a passion killer.
Oh, and absolutely. You know, yeah.
That shocked me that I couldn't kind of, even when I physically wanted to and was physically ready and like that, you know, was up for it and feeling good and desirable and want, like experiencing desire for my partner, then like all of a sudden thinking, did I buy bananas in shopping like halfway through? And I'm going, where is this coming from? You know, just couldn't get in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so hard to come back from.
One woman said that as well. When I was asking for input, one woman actually said that she 5 years on, she still hasn't got her libido back and that she's really struggling to get information about this. It's not something that's talked about. And she feels like, oh, OK, that's gone now. What do I do now? Have you any thoughts or advice on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some good sources out there, no more than yourself, Anna. Jenny Keane is another lady that's really ploughing ahead with trying to get a little bit of a sense of educating women about how to reignite their libido and the importance of self-love, self-care, masturbation around that. And I'm sure Anna has lots to say about things like that and how you can kind of ignite your drive again, because in talking to sexual experts in this area, it is very much a thing that has to be nearly cultivated. Isn't that right, Anna? What do you think?
Yeah, and I think one thing definitely to remember is like that, you know, reigniting your libido or, you know, getting those feelings back for the right reasons, I think is a really important thing that we talk about. Like, so because it's important to you, you know, and it's not kind of from an external pressure, because I feel like a lot of the things that you read or you look up are, you know, for the sake of your relationship or for the sake of your partner. And yes, of course, for a lot of people, it is important in their relationship and they want to please their partner. But, you know, kind of bringing it back and saying like, OK, like I want to get this back because it makes me feel good and I feel desirable and, you know, I feel great afterwards. I sleep better. Those different things. And I love that you mentioned masturbation there as well, Elaine, because when we talk about sex after childbirth, there's this immediate association with penetration. That's just what we think about. Whereas, you know, that really doesn't have to be the case. If it is that you're not feeling sexual yourself, you know, that can be where it starts then with masturbation and getting in touch with yourself and what turns you on again. Because I found as well that it changes. It changes completely. You know, things feel different. Things that would have kind of, you know, got the juices flowing previously are completely different now to what they would have been before. So I think that's interesting. So it's about exploring maybe new things as well. But yeah, I love that idea of reigniting something like that's in you. When you say that, Linnea, about that woman that said, that person, I don't know if it was a woman, but about the 5 years, I went to a conference before in Trinity and there was a woman talking there. Now, I can't for the life of me think of her name, but she was talking about the lack of information that women are given in maternity hospitals about how childbirth is going to affect sexual activity or sexual feelings afterwards. And she mentioned in it, now this was in my naivety, this was probably like, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, and she mentioned in it that after her first child she didn't feel sexual for 10 months afterwards. And I remember being shocked by that, like being like, 10 months, oh my god. Whereas now I can completely see that, I can completely get that. In particular, like if a person, now, I'm not breastfeeding myself, but I know just from talking to people with breastfeeding that that can be an added layer to it. Like, so if you decide to breastfeed your child for the first year of their life, you know, that part of your body then for you, which a lot of people can be connected with, you know, sexual experiences, can sometimes be off limits, and therefore that can affect your kind of ability to get going, I suppose. So I don't, it's also, yeah, it's complicated.
And I think on that point, Anna, actually just the breastfeeding thing, because I did breastfeed quite a bit. Every baby I had, I breastfed for longer. It's the over touch. It's the touched out that really affected my sexual drive, because I was co-sleeping and I was, you know, breastfeeding on demand. And so when that goes on for a year or two and then you compound it with lack of sleep and everything, you're just touched out. And it's not even that you're associating your breast with function, it's more that you just could not even, then when you have some space to yourself, you just want to enclose yourself in that space.
Yeah,
for me. Now that's not for everybody, I know. And then also I think when you're giving so much to your kids, in terms of, it's having compassion for yourself around that. I think that in terms of the pressure, and I do hear a lot of women like saying, my poor husband, they follow up with, you know, I haven't had sex yet. And that might be only in the first few months after they've had their baby, my poor husband. And I kind of laugh it off and stuff. But I think it is about having compassion for yourself as a mother, not for the first year, for many of the years, because it takes about 5 years, I think, to get your head above water when they're less dependent and they're beginning to kind of spend more time away from you. And often women go back to work in that period of time too. So talk about an energy expenditure, you know, it's just, you're trying to really kind of, and yeah, it is about maybe changing what sex is in your head. And like you said, maybe looking at it, allowing ourselves pleasure. And I don't think we're great. Well, I don't think I'm great at accessing that as a mum always, because I'm always switched on, like the next thing that I have to do. And I'm, you know, trying to get the fun with the kids and everything, but it's trying to translate that over.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I've had a lot of people pick up on a lot of those things, including what you said there, Anna, about how actually pleasure and sex can change. And it can be a very different experience after having kids. And it doesn't need to be a change for the worse. That some people are saying how it's really improved how they communicate with their partners, and actually that it feels better. But also going back to your comments earlier, Elaine, about getting back into the saddle. A few people have said about the comments they had at 6 week checkup, which seems to be kind of the point where you're sent off and you're meant to be ready to go. And it is very much that thing of, okay, you can have penetrative sex now because that's what it means. which obviously is complicated and problematic in a number of different ways. And I think it is very much tied in with that idea of, you know, your husband probably can't wait for very much longer, assuming that you have a husband in the first place. But what would you say to people who are nervous about that side of things, Elaine, as a physiotherapist, who worry about whether it will hurt, what you can do? I had one woman ask, how can you improve tightness after childbirth? I mean, I think there's a lot of different stuff that people worry about to do with if you've given birth that route, what it will feel like, what might go wrong.
I think in the early stages, you know, if you're trying intercourse between, say, 6 to 12 weeks, there can be a natural amount of protection still going around the muscles at the entrance to the vagina. If you've had a tear or an episiotomy, there can be elements of pain involved with intercourse. And I've had women approach that in different ways. Some will wait until they've had a check with a physiotherapist because they feel like they're just going to get the go ahead and that will give them the confidence to try it. I think I've seen women, you know, be really open with their partners. Like, I've had women communicate with me that they've shown their partners the episiotomy line. They've shown them what's going on down there. And that way they've been able to navigate it together and kind of talking about the delivery together and things that have come up from their husband and their experience of it maybe brings them into a joint space of what's gone, you know, what's occurred. And then, people will try it nearly as a functional thing to begin with.
Yeah.
Like it's an experimental, you know, kind of check. And they slowly and cautionary, I think, is a word that came up in some of my messages to start with. And, you know, some people will have the experience of being pleasantly surprised and they're like, "Ooh, that wasn't too bad. In fact, that was quite nice." And then others may experience some pain and discomfort around it that can go away if they are encouraged to try it again, or they might shelve it for a few weeks and come back to it. I know lubricant came up. And yes, that's a huge one.
Yeah.
For C-section and vaginal deliveries, because hormonal change can lead to dryness down there. C-section can actually lead to you being a little bit tighter there. And that can contribute to a feeling of nearly a grating feeling as you're trying to have intercourse, like, you know, a very dry feeling. And that can be about navigating different positions, taking it very slow, lots of foreplay, and maybe sticking with that for a little while, then even using finger at the start and just seeing how that feels and just kind of getting, I suppose, a feel of it all again and seeing how your body copes with that. Some women who have had a vaginal delivery will experience quite a bit of stretch that affects their sensation there. Their nerves can be impacted and yes, they can feel looser. Pelvic floor exercises, so your squeeze and your release, have been shown to improve blood flow down there and mobility and help to regain a sense of tightening down there, I suppose. Mm. That can take a few months and even up to a year or two to recover. Often worth checking in with a women's health physiotherapist if sensation is an issue and you're feeling loose there and you're not really sure what to do about it.
What should you expect if I went to you after giving birth vaginally and I wanted to have a checkup and just kind of go, what's happened?
Yeah.
What can I expect? What would that be like? What would you say and do?
So I had loads in this morning, even, you know, just women coming to me. They often come between the 6 and 12 week mark and we have a great chat about things like your bowels and your urine and like how all of that functional stuff is going. And we'll tip on intercourse, whether you've tried it and what you're expecting around that and how it fit for you around your delivery. And so we touch on how that went for women and, you know, we'll get an insight into whether they had a difficult delivery or maybe they're processing that still or, you know. And then we'll check you in standing, just your recovery of your physical body, and then into lying on the bed. And we will check your pelvic floor using a vaginal exam with your permission, if you're okay with that. Sometimes we have an option to use ultrasound if you're not ready for that just yet. And we'll check how intact the perineum is and whether it's painful, how well you can use your pelvic floor muscles. And then I tend to guide women towards self-management tools that they can use to help improve their postnatal function and recovery. So that might be massage or and breathing often and pelvic floor exercise. And then overall exercise and advice on returning to general activity and sexual intercourse. And yeah, that lubricant is always top of my list of things that I recommend to women because I find it's overlooked. It's very rarely mentioned. And yeah.
One woman said, I wish somebody had told me that there's good and bad lube. Have you any comments about that, Anna, perhaps?
Yeah, that's something that we hear all the time. People, you know, like Elaine, I'm the same as you, constantly talking about the lube. I'm always recommending it. And I wish people could talk a bit more openly about it. It still seems a bit more shameful, like, you know, to be including the bottle of lube in your weekly shop. But, you know, I think go for it. But yeah, so the good lube and bad lube. So I suppose we would always recommend a water-based lubricant and go for, as, you know, as little and as mainly natural products as you can. But then also be careful then of things that people think of as lubricant that might cause kind of different issues down there. So, for example, coconut oil, for example, some people would think that's a natural lubricant. But if you're kind of using coconut oil for like an intercourse lubricant, then you can mess with the other kind of juices down there and you might come across some trouble in that kind of way as well. So in terms of thrush and other issues like that. So they're kind of, you know, pros and cons of different types of lubricant. But I'd say, you know, your best bet just stick with the KY jelly, the water-based lubricants is kind of your best way to go. But Elaine, can I just say that I wish that there was an Elaine in every maternity hospital that you were sent to for your 6-week check. Like, that sounds exactly like what everybody needs. Like everything you mentioned there in terms of, so you're saying about urine and bowels, exercise, sexual intercourse, like all of those things. Like I am so uncertain about all of those things since giving birth. Like I'm trying to get back into exercise. I have no idea what I can do or can't do. My 6-week check, like don't get me started on that now. Obviously, gave birth during COVID, but I went to the doctors for my 6-week check and they didn't even look at me. I said, you know, do you need to look at my scar? No, does it feel okay? I was like, well, yeah. You know, I don't know. This is my first time doing this. Well, if it feels okay, it should be okay. Yeah. You know, there was no like, oh, that sounds amazing what you're doing, Elaine.
Oh,
I wish that was standard.
Yeah, I wish it was standard too.
Yeah, it is standard in France where everyone is sent for I don't know how many weeks of pelvic floor physio to kind of make sure that they're doing okay and to catch anything that's not okay. And I had a similar experience to you, Anna, after my first forceps birth and episiotomy and significant stitches and stuff, where I kept asking the midwives, this was in London, I kept asking whenever she came to check, it was all about the baby and the baby's weight. And I was like, can you check like that the stitches have healed? And she was like, oh, you know, I'm sure, does it feel fine? I'm sure it's fine. And it was all rushed and I was all stressed and hadn't slept. And eventually it turns out they weren't okay and I had to go back to have it redone. So, I mean, yeah, it feels like a fairly basic thing to check when you've had an episiotomy, you know.
I can remember because I live up in the country a bit. I did live in the outskirts of Dublin and community nurse, maybe not the most modern of nurses at the time. And I've come across some excellent community nurses. But this lady on my second delivery and I wanted her to look at my bits. And I'd say it was only about 3 weeks postnatal, but I wasn't feeling like things were great down there. And I can remember kind of bringing her into my spare room and like lying down and showing her. And like she stood at the door and I think she just looked at it from the farthest distance she could. Yeah, looks fine to me. And I like, obviously, I'm not inhibited by those things. So but even for the most trained people, like clearly, yeah. But by the most like for the most trained people in healthcare, vaginas still really scare people. You know, like why? I had no idea. Yeah. Vaginas, the perineum, the vulva, you know, we're still not in a habit of making women feel like it's an okay part of the body. Like any other skin condition or scar line, you know, that we just would look at it. Maybe palpate it, put our hand on it, see is it feeling okay to that person. I mean, my daughter cut her arm when she was younger, and our follow-up appointment involved a follow-up session to review the scar to make sure it was mobilizing and moving well.
Yeah.
And advice on how to manage that. Mm-hmm. Like, we just don't get that as women, and having had babies, unless we maybe have the access, which isn't there for everybody. Mm. Or, you know, just even the information around women's health physios. And I think it is growing. It's definitely growing, and the openness around it is growing. But oh yeah, like, I envision a world where we would all get access to it. It would be amazing. But yeah, fingers crossed.
And Elaine, that's really funny. So what you're saying there about the normalization, like, of, you know, vulva, perineum, the vagina, all of that. It was really interesting in what you were saying earlier about the women that come to see you, and then they are involving their partners in the recovery process, and they kind of take it step by step. And one of the things that you mentioned that they do is showing their partner the scar or the stitches or whatever, and, you know, kind of saying, this is what we're working with, I suppose. But I find that really interesting, because if you were to talk about sexual intercourse between a man and a woman, we'll say for now, like, we wouldn't really talk about showing the vagina, would we? Like, you wouldn't talk about showing the vulva. But yet, once we've kind of gone through this transition into motherhood, and then it's kind of viewed differently, is it? Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say? I think, like, that's really great what they're doing, you know, with their partners. But the fact that it has to be a kind of, okay, do you know, like, we got there together. Do you know the kind of way? Like, it takes two to make a baby, do you know? So we got there together. And then all of a sudden then it's like, okay, well, I'll invite you in, or I won't.
Yeah.
You know,
And
the issue then becomes mine to share with you. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah. And I would say, to be fair, that's probably reasonably rare, because I'm sure, I mean, there are a lot of women who'd give birth and have never looked at their own vulva. So if you're talking about showing it to your partner, you're not just taking it to that level of actually getting the mirror out and sitting down to have a gawk, but inviting somebody else into that experience. I mean, that's an incredible thing, I think, to do. But I would guess that it's not very common, that it's not the norm.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. And, you know, to say I did that, even, I didn't. Do you know, I think that I think it's nice, though, because I think sometimes it is a lot of the mother going through these things independently. You know, I think essentially some women have, you know, very, very supportive partners, you know, some are kind of in between, and others are maybe a little bit scared of it all and like to be more on the parameter. You know, I think it depends on every partnership, doesn't it, as to how they kind of go through all of that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, isn't it? That, like, you know, I definitely felt myself that, like, as soon as I got pregnant, it was all on me. And I suffered quite a bit with anxiety through my pregnancy, which I never had before. And it was just the weight of the responsibility. Like, anything I did was going to affect this baby. So, you know, what you eat, how much exercise you do, you know, having that extra bar of chocolate, whatever it is, like, I just felt like everything was so on me. And then as soon as the baby was born, that lifted completely. You know, I didn't feel any anxious feelings then after that, because it wasn't solely my responsibility. But I just find that really interesting then, that responsibility then for a lot of people does still remain in terms of your body and recovery. And then if we're talking about intercourse, I suppose, in terms of an aspect of a relationship, and then it's still the woman's responsibility, you know, to get that back up and running and get that area back to the way it was before. Do you know, it's hard to kind of think about that. And then I'm only coming from that, I suppose, from my own point of view, and my friends, we would all be quite open about things. Actually, we were sitting around the other night with both of our partners, and we were talking about piles, and both of the lads were sitting there kind of going, Jesus, I wish they weren't as open about this as they are. But But, you know, so I suppose I can't see it from the side of someone who's not as open about those things. But I do find that interesting that it's a private thing for some mothers.
What advice would you give, Anna, to somebody who finds that it's difficult to talk to their partner about this stuff? Maybe they're anxious about what's going to happen if they try to have intercourse, or maybe they have other desires and they want to continue with some kind of sex life that doesn't involve that, and they're struggling to communicate that. How can you improve communication if perhaps you haven't really had to think about it or worry about it in the same way before having kids?
Yeah, I definitely do think that is a thing. You know, a lot of the time people assume that sex just happens, you know, naturally and without communication, and, you know, you see a person, you desire them, and it all just kind of falls into place really well without any discussion. But that's not necessarily the case for everybody. And even if it does happen that way, I think it can be improved with a lot of conversation and communication. In terms of after childbirth, I think, yeah, like honesty, if you can. Honesty in the way that you're feeling. So like Elaine said earlier on, you know, that you just feel like completely touched out. So I suppose if it's something that you're not used to talking about in terms of sex, the way that I would always say that is try to take the sex kind of out of the conversation. If that's not something that you're used to speaking about, try take the actual sexual aspect out of the conversation. So just talk about your feelings. So like that, I feel completely overwhelmed. I feel like I'm giving everything to the children. I don't want to give any more to anybody else. I need 5 minutes to myself, whatever. So communicate it like obviously say I'm not ready. If you're not ready, try your best to say that. But you can communicate kind of feelings around sex and sexuality without needing to use those words if you're not comfortable with it. So yeah, so going about that. And then I'd also talk about, if you are comfortable with this, about the body changes. Like, so you don't need to be graphic, like I was torn from front to back, you know, you don't need to go that crazy about it. But, you know, you can say like, my body is different to me now. My body feels different to me now. And I'm afraid that my body will feel different to you. You know, maybe we can try different ways of our bodies being together, you know, so without kind of having to say those, using those more personal or sexualized words, maybe would be what I would say there. So yeah, it's communication, but in a less sexualized manner, maybe, if you're not comfortable with it.
What if you feel ready, but you can't find the time and space because there are children everywhere? Any top tips?
Oh, I don't know.
I read
a
really interesting quote actually yesterday, and I just took out the end bit of it. It was, create a party that your libido wants to show up to, and also get a door lock.
Yeah.
And like, I thought, God, I'm exhausted even thinking about creating that party, I have to say. But, but yeah, like, I think that's a really good question, actually. Trying to create time and space and prioritize it.
Prioritizing, yeah.
Yeah, I know somebody who has, I think they call it Cartoon Saturday or something like that, when obviously the kids are a tiny bit older, but where the kids watch a movie every Saturday morning and they know that they'll be so gripped by it that it's kind of safe for an hour or two. But I don't know, that might not
I
be for everyone.
Remember, I always remember Tommy Tiernan say a sketch of his, I think he has 5 children, and he said that they used to put the music on, you know, in the cot kind of thing, and when they were younger, and then they'd be having sex to the tune of whatever music was playing to their child.
Oh, God.
That's brilliant. I think for that one, I would kind of like, a bit of advice that I give to people is that, like, and we've kind of touched on this already, is that it doesn't have to be like the full blown, completely naked, clothes off, really romantic, candles lit sexual intercourse. Like, if definitely if that's what you want, you know, hold out for that. But sometimes it might just be, you know, sharing a kiss or like a longer embrace, like, so not just the peck on the cheek when they come in from work, you know, a little bit longer than that. And then that might kind of spark something in you. It might make you feel like, oh, that was actually kind of nice, or, you know, and then kind of see where it goes, I think, would be what I would say. Like, I'm not saying, like, you know, just grab a quickie in the kitchen if you can, but, like, you know, just being a bit more flexible, I suppose, because pre-baby sex, like, Jesus, like that, you could spend a Saturday afternoon, that's all you could end up doing. But that's just not going to happen now, do you know? So it's kind of, I suppose, not letting go of your old ideas of what sex is, because, you know, if that's what you want, that's what you want. And having those kind of memories and those things to go back on are always lovely in terms of your relationship with each other. And I remember actually listening to a podcast with Claire Balding. She's like a influencer person. She lost her hair, and but she had a baby quite young with her partner. And I remember her saying about remembering that, like, her partner's called Ian, and she was saying that remembering that without Claire and Ian, there was no baby. Do you know? So always make time for the partner, because even though now the kids are your number one, even though you might not admit that to the partner, that without the partner, there, you know, their babies weren't there. So I that really stuck with me when she said that, because I was like, yeah, you know, you need to remember that they're there too. And like that. So even if it is just like a quick kiss and a cuddle, I think it's reconnecting, isn't it? And you never know where it might lead, you know.
One thing that we haven't talked about, which a few people brought up, is how even if you have a C-section, penetration or sex in the vagina can feel different. And one person even said that it can be painful. Elaine, maybe you can speak to the physiological side of that. Why might that be?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because it's something that I experienced and I had to have physiotherapy for after my first baby. So I can speak from it from a very personal level. It's very, very real and very surprising thing. Basically, you see when they, I suppose when they bring the two sides of the scar together at the front, and also the depth of layers of stitching that goes underneath that, it affects what we call our fascia, which is that connective tissue that's under our skin but over our muscle. And the fascia that is in that lower abdominal region is actually connected to our pelvic floor. And so if you imagine that they're drawing that tissue upwards, it may affect just the structural aspects of your pelvic floor. If you, and many women do, go into pregnancy with a tighter pelvic floor, so about 50% or more women have a resting tone in their pelvic floor that might be just a little bit tighter than others. And then, of course, then when you have that tightness going on from the scar tissue, you know, from the scar tissue kind of being pulled upwards, then you can get this reactivity coming into the pelvic floor that I have observed and felt postnatally in women regularly enough that I can tell you it is a thing. The pelvic floor and the lower abdominal region, as we know, our whole body is connected. So our core is our pelvic floor at the bottom, our abdominals at the front, our diaphragm at the top, connecting into our back muscles and our glutes. And it's all like a core canister. And so by, you know, changing one aspect of that, you're going to have an effect on other areas. And so if you throw into the mix then maybe trying to breastfeed as well, you've got that hormonal change. And even if you're not breastfeeding, it can take a month or two for your hormones to settle down and you're in a lower estrogen state. So the two of those hand in hand can lead to painful intercourse. And so what I really recommend when you're re-embarking, and a question that came up with me was, when is good to try sex after a C-section? Do you have to wait as long as maybe you're advised 6 weeks post a vaginal delivery? And that's because of infection, and there, you know, you don't want to introduce infection into the area. And there wouldn't be that risk there necessarily, but you just mightn't feel comfortable enough to try it before the 6 week mark. I'd probably be advising you to wait the 6 weeks if you can, remembering that your pelvic floor has carried your baby. So it's adjusting. It stretches about three times its size, just carrying your baby, never mind, you know, whatever delivery you have. So that's all just adjusting afterwards. The pelvic bones are adjusting and retreating, I suppose, a little bit. And so you've got all of that stuff to navigate afterwards. And when you're recovering, breathing is a really important part of helping your pelvic floor recover. and particularly around C-section, so belly breathing, to help release that pelvic floor. So not going straight into loads of kegeling and squeezing, but respecting the fact that maybe you need to do a little bit of relaxation work. And then, like we touched on before, lubricant. And then, of course, finding a position. So somebody asked me, what's the best position? I wouldn't think that missionary is going to be great. You know, some people might find it okay, but maybe you, and that goes for embarking maybe on intercourse after a vaginal delivery too, maybe you leading the race a little bit, maybe you being on top so that you can guide things a little bit, may suit some people more than others. It's just that they've not got that compression on their C-section line. And then, of course, the body changes around a C-section scar line and things, you know, and that can start with maybe placing your hand over the scar, over your clothes. Some people are really, really just upset by their scar line. It depends on how the C-section occurs, you know, whether it was an emergency or an expected C-section. And some people have to really kind of navigate that aspect of it and how it fits in their feelings about their body. Then when you feel ready, maybe touching the scar line, maybe massaging your belly and then leading down to the scar line. Yeah, that can take a few months. And if you find that that's not clearing, that's definitely a reason to come to your physio or to your GP if you're finding you're struggling with coming to terms with your scar and that might be affecting how you feel about your body and sex and stuff.
I was going to ask about that, actually. Is there any point at which, like, regardless of how the baby comes out, is there any point at which painful sex in one way or another is a red flag and you should go and see someone?
They say generally, I would say that if symptoms are not regressing by the 12-week mark at the latest, that you need to get that checked.
Yeah.
That's having tried maybe intercourse once or twice in that time. You know, if your scar line just, you know, when it's not feeling right, definitely 12-week at the latest, and you can come sooner than that. If you've tried intercourse a few times, you'll know, you know, you will know what's not moving and not changing. And some people can feel very isolated pain around an episiotomy line that can warrant bringing up with someone. Absolutely. That often needs intervention. If it's not from a medical practitioner like your doctor, your consultant, or and then it might be the physiotherapist that we can help kind of work with your GP or your consultant or whoever has looked after you during your pregnancy to kind of get on top of that. Yeah. Pain is never okay with intercourse.
Yes.
You know, that's sustained. You know, maybe once, maybe when you're trying it first, it might be a low level of discomfort. But it really shouldn't be sharp and like unbearable. And that goes across the board, whether you've had a baby or not, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Lynn, that's actually something that we, like, that's one of those kind of myths that we try to dispel all the time. So in terms of like the first time you have sex in general, like first time you have penetrative sex, like with anal sex and like that sex after childbirth, a lot of people just assume that there should be pain there. But like you said there, it should never be painful. Obviously, a bit of discomfort. And if it's, you know, a once off, you know, but a sustainable kind of pain thing. We're really trying to dispel that those times, it's not just a given that it should be painful, to try and dispel that. But just to say there, Lane, I thank you so much for the things that you said there about the C-section, because I have been feeling completely alone in that, what you said there in terms of touching the scar and parts of my body since having a baby. And it's only now that you say it that I'm saying, oh, I do feel like that. I would have been number one for my body moisturizer. I was always good at it for putting it on after the shower. And now I find that I'm just skipping parts of my body. So it's still going onto my arms and my legs, but maybe nowhere in the middle section. And that's funny. I have never really, I don't know why I was doing that. I never thought about it. But now that you say it, there is definitely something in me there that doesn't want to touch that part of my body, the scar and the surrounding areas. So yeah, maybe it must be something that I need to work on. So thank you so much for saying that. I hope that there's other people listening to this that maybe will, that might open their eyes to that too. That's really nice to hear. Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad. And well, like I'm gaining loads from you, Anna, today too. So it's a mutual thank you. And it's interesting. And I'm learning all the time what's best to the more women I see, I learn from my patients all the time too, from my clients that come into me, but also I'm always educating myself about the best way to speak to women and learn what is appropriate and how everybody treats and deals with things differently. And as a physiotherapist, not being just in the physical, because I just don't feel like I can separate them. I need to be aware of the emotional impact of pregnancy and birth, because so many different forms, no more than sex. And I've heard you speak on your TED talk, or was it you were on YouTube? I caught your video there. And just there's so many different forms of what is perceivable for someone with birth and with pregnancy, and how every woman copes with that is so dependent on their life experience and on their family interactions, everything. You know, it doesn't always, it's not always this fabulous, amazing thing that we see maybe advertised, like sex often is perceived as well, you know, that these women are all naked and lovely and we all, you know, so it's just often not that way, is it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, and it's interesting just when we're talking about like bodies and how you feel about your body. One of my friends that I was speaking to about this before doing this episode is a single parent, and was, you know, went through the pregnancy as a single parent as well. And so I was asking them, what was it like maybe thinking about, like, after giving birth to this baby, maybe thinking about then exposing your postpartum body to a new person? You know, so who's not connected to the baby or connected to the birth. And it was really interesting because it was very similar feelings, actually. So we're talking about a lot of the time, like, we will, I suppose, assume that there's a partner around and they were involved in the baby making process, in the birth, and then in the after care. So it's funny that even with that person who we are so intimate and that we know so well, we can have the same feelings as my friend was speaking about having with a brand new person who wasn't involved, you know. So I think including everyone in the conversation, I suppose, because, you know, we all, you know, becoming parents in different ways. And yeah, it's interesting how it is all quite similar feelings despite the situation.
If you could change one thing about how we talk about sex after childbirth and how we support new mothers with their sexuality after childbirth, what would it be?
Definitely just a more open conversation about it that invites a more comprehensive view of it, that maybe supports women a little bit more in their early years, so that they are given more support to maybe achieve a more balanced lifestyle, so that we can kind of maybe keep our home life, what am I trying to say, kind of supported. And because I think we as mum, you know, we're just kind of getting over the hump of managing our new baby when we have to go back to work. And I see a lot of women juggling massive amounts, and how a sex life could even exist within the cultural demands. It's just really beyond me how we still manage it. We do manage it. I know we do. But I don't think that the very structure of how we're kind of managing mothers and early child years within that, I just don't think it sets you up right. And that's kind of getting into big stuff, I suppose, isn't it? But
yeah,
I just think how are we meant to even maintain those things, those simple things? I think it's allowing women to maybe even talk about those things though too, like, just talk about the struggles around that, because I don't feel like we're allowed. But that's just me, maybe.
I don't think it's just you.
I completely agree, Elaine. So I suppose structurally it's not really set up like for leaving much space for intimacy, but then, like, and whatever about conversations that you have with your partner, but even conversations around like women's health, like, I just don't feel like that sex and sexuality is being spoken about enough. You know, you go to all of the antenatal classes and you prepare for the birth and you prepare for the labor, and I don't know how many videos I looked at about what goes in the stupid hospital bag, but there was way too many of them, but nothing then really to prepare me for the postpartum period. Like, sexually saying the word period, like, my first period after I had the baby, I thought I was hemorrhaging. I thought I was gone. Like, I couldn't And I'm trying to carry him around and I couldn't sit down on the couch, and I was like, didn't know what was going on. Nobody had ever spoken to me about that. And when I say I was reading about pregnancy and birth and the baby, I was nonstop reading about everything and didn't see once that the first period afterwards, like, you know, if you're not breastfeeding, that you'll get it sooner and that it'll be a bit horrific. But, you know, that was never mentioned to me. The support, I think, in this country for mothers is in particular now in the pandemic, like, I spent my whole maternity leave in lockdown, not one mother and baby group, nothing. No, you know, I'm lucky that I live with my parents, but lucky and unlucky. But so, you know, I have the support of my mother, but, you know, I'm not going to talk to my mother about sex. Well, I could, but I'm not going to.
I think it would be lovely if it was brought up. I make it a point of bringing it up with my women as, you know, as frequently as they can manage.
Yeah, because I was going to ask,
like, just kind of making it an open conversation. Yeah,
because when you said that as part of your physio examination that you do have a discussion with them about sex, I was going to ask you, what is the reaction to that in general? Because obviously when people are going to you because you are a women's health specialist, but so they might expect it, but, you know, in my head I wouldn't necessarily think that if I go to a physio that they're going to ask me about sexual activities. So do you sometimes get a bit of like shock or discomfort when it comes to that part of it, or are they coming to you with those kind of issues? Is that more so why they're there?
Some women are coming with those issues specifically, and yeah, they have sought me out because of that, or they've seen it on social media that it's a thing, and that's great. I would normally leave the sex question till the end, unless it comes up sooner than that. And normally it actually flows really nicely into that question. And I'll just pop it in as an, sex or with intercourse, have you had a chance to try that yet? And so I never expect that people have. And I always just say, have you thought about that yet? Or, you know, and women will vary, you know, and I'll always acknowledge that it's, you know, it's a busy, busy time and that I'm not expecting them to have done that, because I think, again, women might go, oh, no, we haven't tried that yet. And it was on my list of things to do. And in that way, we're kind of trying to make it part of the very safe space of conversation around these things, but make them normal too. Like, you know, this is stuff that needs to be brought out there into the open too.
So, Elaine, I'm not sure if you've seen that. I put up a question box and just like, what's the first word that comes into your head when you think about sex after childbirth? And they were all really negative responses. So like, oh God, no, scary, terrifying, really negative responses. Yeah. And I think, and Elaine, you touched on this slightly as well, is that after, like, sex after childbirth can definitely become more positive. So like you say, different sensations, maybe different positions working better, a better feeling more connected with your body, and maybe being really, really proud of your body and how powerful it is and everything that it can do. You know, like when I think of the transformation that my body made from, you know, pre-pregnancy through carrying a 9.7 baby and, you know, getting it out of my body safely, and then, you know, coming back around to getting back into exercise and how I'm feeling now, 7 months afterwards, you know, I'm a bit kind of like, yeah, like, go me, you know. So now that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, I'm jumping into bed every 2 minutes, but I definitely do feel like, yeah, like this body is so much more than what it looks like, you know. It's done so much, like it's a warrior.
And I think also I hear so often about mothers who say that motherhood has radicalized them, firstly, and that it has given them a kind of no more fucks to give kind of vibe of, do you know what, actually screw everything that I was scared of, or screw all of that nonsense and worry and whatever it might be. And that it kind of gives you a courage or something that you mightn't have had before, which might play into what you're talking about there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, there definitely has been negative aspects to it, you know, and I'm definitely not going to deny that. Like, we spoke about it earlier about change in drive and libido and like just being able to get in the moment and all of those things. And, you know, I can 100% relate to all of those things. But I do think that there can be a positive discussion around sex after childbirth as well. And then if we do continue to have those positive conversations, then, you know, maybe those feelings that people have around it, about it being terrifying or scary, can be changed, or maybe, you know, flipped on their head, or that it doesn't always have to be like that. You know, sometimes you can feel more connected to your partner, more connected to yourself, or maybe even just physically it feels better. Maybe you got that extra stitch and you're a little bit tighter. I don't know.
Oh God, don't get me started on the husband stitch or whatever they call it. I'll go on all day.
I love that, Anna, though. I think that is a really nice note to finish up on. And even in terms of kind of changing or contributing to the way that I approach things, because we're very problem based and problem focused at times as physiotherapists. We have, you know, we've kind of got a bit of a fix it attitude at times. And yet I always do try to have women leave the clinic as well empowered at kind of how they're doing, because they're always worried that they're behind the norm of where they should be. And I totally agree that, like, words like free, you know, feeling more free around your body maybe, or shedding inhibitions, should be maybe embraced and brought forward if you can. And that's a really nice, yeah, it's a nice way, a twist on it, isn't it? Mm.
That was Elaine Barry and Anna Keogh on Bits of Me. You absolutely should follow them both, so I'll put their details in the show notes. If you want to help keep these conversations going, you can support the podcast at patreon.com/bitsofme. And if you would share this episode with new mams, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks for listening.